Disability Services Staffing. This chapter examines issues regarding disability services staff who are paid for or funded by Aging, Disability and Home Care, ADHC, issues such as attracting staff to the carer profession, as well as staff training, retention and pay, are canvassed. The number of staff, 11.1, in 2010/11 ADHC employs more than 13,000 staff, 80% of whom work in direct client services, and provides all funds services that support more than 260,000 people. 1. The committee acknowledges that the agency is one of the largest human services organisations in New South Wales, and that its sheer size indicates a significant commitment to disability services by the New South Wales Government. 11.2. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive of ADHC, outlined to the committee some of the staffing characteristics of the organisation. ADHC has a workforce of around 14,000 people. The vast majority of those workers care workers in a group home network we run, where we have over 2,500 clients being helped by about 3,500 staff. We have a Home Care Service of New South Wales, which is a statutory authority that effectively is integrated into the agency. It has 4,500 staff. We have a set of large residential services. We have got about another 2,500 nurses in it. We also have a therapy case management workforce of around 8,000. 11.3. ADHC also funds around 900 local government and non-government organisations to provide similar services across New South Wales. There is no clear data to indicate how many people work in the sector in these organisations. Nevertheless, it is evident to the committee that the disability and ageing sector is a significant employer in the state. 11.4. The committee heard that the management of the disability staff workforce is a huge task, especially when a care organisation is endeavouring to provide a flexible service. For example, Ms. Bowen of the Disability Trust told the committee, last year the trust delivered 83,188 hours of respite and in-home care, but that was delivered in 27,628 episodes of care using about 200 staff over different durations of shifts, over different shift penalties. What that means is that the rostering, financial management, human resources and workforce development is incredibly complicated. That is a new thing. In the old days, funded services just opened their doors and said, this is what you will receive. The management of those sorts of systems is not complex. Delivering flexible service systems is incredibly complex. 3. The importance of good staff. 11.5. The committee understands that having a family member in need of support can be a highly emotional and physically exhausting experience. Hence the importance of well-trained, professional, caring staff cannot be overemphasized. Ms. Epstein Frisch, of Family Advocacy, explained to the committee that sometimes carers do not understand the huge influence they can have on a person's and their family's life. Families often report that difficulties arise when their family member with a disability is supported by staff who are not attuned to the person. Many services seem reluctant to acknowledge the impact of the knowledge, skills, and qualities of staff on the person being supported. When staff are not attuned to the needs and communication of the person with a disability, difficulties can arise and can be expressed as OHS concerns. As a result, the person with disability is then penalized by restriction in service or opportunities. Families want services to acknowledge when difficulties arise as a result of factors in staff. Families stress that the person with disability should not be blamed and penalized for these staff failings. 4. 11.6. The committee is also aware that people appreciate support that is run well with caring staff. For instance, in her submission, Ms. Shields shared with the committee her experience with respite care for her son and the implicit value of caring, long-term staff. There is one service that I would not give up, and that is centre-based respite now. However, ADHC runs an excellent respite facility in my local area, with experienced, caring and long-term staff who have come to know their clients and families. I can tell you that almost everything that has made my life worth living in the past 10 to 15 years has happened because my son has been in respite. 5. 11.7. Similarly, Mr. Anthony Verrill recounted to the committee his experience with a home care provider and the important service that it provides. On the positive side, we have been most appreciative of our home care provider, which has always done its best to provide high quality carers on the days and at the times that we requested. There has never been a problem on the rare occasions we have requested that it provide a different carer due to our unhappiness for some reason or another, with the carer that it has provided. Home care is a wonderful and extremely important service, without which many disabled people like me could not survive in a home situation. 6.11.8 The author of Submission 40 also praised her care workers, and said that most had been lovely with a genuine desire and ability to help. 7.11.9 Ms. Bernadette Maloney commended the carer system at the King's Dean Special School and Residential Services, where three or four clients are assigned one carer. 8. Ms. Maloney also praised her son's former care workers at the St. Anthony's Respite Service for their high quality care. 9.11.10 The author of Submission 43 extolled the behavior of the care workers at his brother's group home. The author noted that he witnessed and admired the staff's professional attention to detail and love in delivering quality care. 10.11.11 Mr. Colleen has been a home care service user for the last 22 years, and explained to the committee that some of the staff had been helping him for 18 years. He explained further, "I have been using home care for personal care for some 22 years now. Some workers have been with me for 18 years. I would not survive in the community without home care's personal care support service and other programs in Sydney that run this essential service. I find that the people who come to me are fairly well trained and do their job. I am not saying that everything is perfect. I am not saying that there is not an initial hiccup in the service, where sometimes someone does not turn up. The coordination might not have rostered someone on, or something like that. But overall, I find it reasonably good. That is my perspective. It provides services to lots of people." 11.11.12 Mr. Moore explained to the committee that an independent survey had found positive results in regard to customer feedback. "But I put alongside that the Home Care Service of New South Wales does make a virtue of being the HACC provider who steps into the space where no one else will go. That often includes late night, out-of-hours servicing. I also think that, as an organization that has 4,500 staff, and is a $200 million a year operation, not everything will go perfectly. But the home care service does an independently conducted biennial consumer customer satisfaction survey. The results for the last one are just in, and it attracts a 95% satisfaction rate. So, yes, I know there are some things that have not gone well, but there has now been a long history of home care being in the mid to upper levels in terms of client satisfaction." 12. Committee comment. 11.13 The committee recognizes the high value that people with disability and their families place on carer staff that are highly professional, experienced and caring. The committee appreciates and acknowledges the many thousands of hard-working, caring employees who work in the aging and disability support sector. The positive comments that persons with a disability and their families had towards their carers were often the only positive comments that were received by the committee. 11.14 The committee is aware that ADHC has recently introduced local carers awards for carers who have made an outstanding contribution to caring for someone. 13. The committee considers that it would be worthwhile for ADHC to establish a similar cross-sector employee recognition program, so that clients can nominate an exceptional employee for appropriate recognition. Attracting and retaining staff. 11.15. The first part of this chapter highlighted the large number of employees in the care sector. Nevertheless, the committee also heard a considerable amount of evidence that attracting and retaining staff is a significant issue. Reasons given include poor pay, difficult or unpleasant work, lack of career pathways, inadequate training. 11.16 This section of the chapter discusses the difficulty in attracting workers to the sector and then retaining them once they're there. Attracting staff. 11.17 Warringah Council explained to the committee that in its experience, attracting and retaining passionate, dedicated workers is a common issue across service providers. Attracting and retaining passionate, quality dedicated workers to the disability sector are common issues for service providers which impact on their service outcomes. Skilled, strategic management staff are also difficult to attract and retain, and greatly impact on the development of services. 14.11.18 Similarly, Ms. Hewitt of Futures Alliance and Uniting Care Disability explained to the committee that, as a service provider, it was finding it increasingly difficult to recruit staff. She observed that attracting people to the profession, especially young people fresh out of school, was problematic. "We as service providers find it increasingly difficult to recruit staff into positions. I think there is both the issue of the types of salaries and conditions that people are provided as well as the very nature of the kind of work that we are asking people to do. particularly when you get a cohort of younger people who are coming out expecting that they are going to work in nice clean jobs, that they are going to travel a lot, and things like that, and that is not the lot of somebody who is a paid carer. Those are the kinds of things that we as service providers we are constantly facing, how to both reward our staff in the way that we need to, but attract good staff to those kind of positions, and attract staff who are fit and healthy enough themselves. It is often women who have raised their children who feel the desire to become a carer, which is wonderful, but they are often the people who are not physically in a position to do some of the work that we are requiring them to do. 15.11.19. Mr. Kelevanglika also referred to the difficulties in attracting and retaining staff. It is becoming increasingly difficult to find appropriately skilled and qualified staff for aged care and disability support programs and to properly remunerate such staff. 16.11.20. National Disability Services, NDS, is the National Industry Association for Disability Services, representing over 650 not-for-profit organizations. Its submission highlighted the need for a skilled expanding workforce, and estimated that there will be a need to fill 38,000 vacancies in the sector in the 5 years to 2014. In light of the growth experienced under the first 5 years of Stronger Together, one of the key lessons learned was the need for a skilled, dedicated and expanding workforce to deliver high-quality services that achieve quality outcomes for people with a disability, their families and carers in New South Wales. The ever-growing demand for services and movements within and out of the sector, resulting from retirement, change and churn, only compound this need. In 2009-10, in its carriage of the workforce recruitment project, NDS undertook a disability and home and community care workforce projection exercise. That exercise identified a need to fill 38,000 vacancies in the 5 years to 2014 across frontline support and professional roles, as well roles in facilities and transport, administration, and management. 17.11.21. Mr. Moore outlined to the committee that there is a labour shortage, which has been particularly acute in the disability care sector. We need to solve the issue of where the workforce is going to come from, and how we are going to get the right skill and quality of workers. In 2007 we were witnessing a significant labour shortage within the specialist disability system. We know that specialist disability services are not generally the sector of choice for employees, and that there are a lot of employees, prospective employees, who choose care work, but they tend to choose care work in the aged care sector, rather than in the specialist disability service sector. 18.11.22. Dr. Moore, Manager, Workforce Initiative, National Disability Services, explained to the committee that there is a lack of understanding in the community about what working in the disability and aging support sector involves. We found very quickly that the sector does not have the visibility, that it does not have the understanding of what work in the sector involves, and that there are career pathways and career opportunities within it, and multiple careers. So, we needed to develop an initiative to open up and shift perceptions that were blocking people joining the sector. Most fundamentally, that can be summarized as people believing that the work done here is not professional, it is done by volunteers, and that it used to be done by people who are since 19.11.23. Another complicating factor in terms of staff recruitment is the physically demanding nature of the work. Some care workers are expected to complete strenuous tasks. The author of Submission 106 called for all care workers to have a regular medical examinations and functional assessments to make sure they are capable of carrying out their roles. 20.11.24. The often physically demanding nature of care work also has implications for the occupational health and safety of workers in the profession. 11.25. Anglica identified that not only was an increase in the base pay rate required to attract staff, the industry needed more defined career pathways. Increased funding is required in order to raise the base wage rate, in order to attract the appropriate people with skills into the sector. Attracting qualified personnel is reflected in the remuneration offered, and as such government must increase funding accordingly. To operate to best practice standards, not-for-profits must seek to be employers of choice, and to do this must offer better conditions, opportunities and reasonable, comparable pay rates. This will encourage younger qualified people to see aged care and disability support as a real career option. 21. 11.26. With its long experience in providing care, Anglica raised the following considerations about attracting and retaining staff to the profession. Providing defined career pathways, particularly for young workers entering the sector. This cohort could be attracted by training opportunities that would provide a career pathway. Many people coming into the aged care workforce and disability support are mature staff and perhaps entering a second or third career. Recognition of overseas qualifications can support be offered until they are accredited, and giving opportunities to work their way through the care system. Tapping cohorts of potential employees, such as women with young children. Providing more flexible working hours and child care support. 22. The Workforce Recruitment Strategy. 11.27. In its submission, ADHC outlined a program to attract staff to the sector, known as the Workforce Recruitment Strategy. It explained that the purpose of the strategy is to grow the pool of labor available to not-for-profit, government and non-government organisation providers of disability and community care services in New South Wales. The strategy has received the following funding allocations: $3.3 million, 1 year, 2008, 2009, $1 million, 1 year, 2009, 2010, $4.273 million, 2 years, 2010, 2012, 23, 11.28. ADHC explained that the strategy is targeted at three primary groups within the community: parents returning to work, education leavers, and career changes. There are two sub-projects in the strategy: Carer Careers and Project Able. Both of these projects are explained in the following sections. The Carer Careers Program. 11.29. Carer Careers is an internet-based recruitment initiative with an associated fully staffed careers center. It has been established to help job seekers and hiring managers in the community care and disability sector to meet their recruitment needs. The program is funded by ADHC and implemented by National Disability Services. Dr. Moore explained to the committee that the underlying rationale for the Carer Careers program was to attract potential employees to the sector. So the biggest job, before we even try to create training opportunities and skilling a workforce that we attract into the sector, is to get them to see it as desirable in the first place. That is fundamentally, in a nutshell, what Carer Careers has been about. But in terms of implementation, it has also allowed us an opportunity to understand the pressure points that organizations experience in terms of recruitment and attraction and retention, and to respond to those and provide some very skilled recruitment expertise directly into organizations that are moving to attract people. It is also allowing us to have direct relationships with respect to candidates. 24. 11.30. In its submission, NDS further elaborated on Carer Careers and the number of people who have participated in the website. Carer Careers has achieved significant early success. In just 6 months, it has attracted over 160,000 individuals to its recruitment portal, 5,000 plus job applications and more than 3,000 suitable candidates into its talent pool. It has also secured the participation of 99% of the sector " employers, advertised more than 1,300 jobs, and generated recognition and a supportive community for those already working in the sector. 25. Project Able. 11.31. Project Able is another program funded by ADHC and implemented by NDS. It is a work placement program, providing an opportunity for secondary school students and allied health tertiary students to be placed with a service provider and gain experience in the field. As part of the program, secondary school students will be able to obtain a Certificate 3 in either disability or community services, and tertiary students will gain a 3-month paid position. 26. 11.32. ADHC reports that to date, 320 secondary students from 26 schools, public and private, have enrolled in the program, and that 4 disability and community care organizations have signed on to host students. ADHC also notes that the Project Able concept is transferable to other key areas of workforce interest, such as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders and culturally and linguistically diverse populations, and that plans are in development for these two project components in 2010-12. 27. Committee comment. 11.33. It became evident to the committee that there are a multitude of reasons why care providers are experiencing difficulty in recruiting staff. These included rates of pay, working conditions and a lack of career structure. The next section of this chapter focuses on workforce retention. 11.34. The committee supports the good work of the workforce recruitment strategy, and notes that proactive recruitment work by ADHC and non-government service providers will assist in attracting people to the profession. The committee further notes that funding for this program is not allocated after 2012, and recommends that 6 months prior to the end of current funding, the strategy is reviewed with a view to extending it for a further 2 years. Recommendation 1. That 6 months before the end of funding of the workforce recruitment strategy, ADHC, with the assistance of stakeholders, review the strategy in consultation with stakeholders, with a view to extending it for a further 2 years. The retention of staff. 11.35. The committee also heard evidence that not only are service providers finding it difficult to recruit staff, keeping them in the profession is a challenge. 11.36. The Physical Disability Council and Council on the Aging together submitted that workers are leaving the community sector due to low wages, and that there is a lack of younger people entering the industry. They submitted to the committee. It is a fact that workers are leaving the community sector due to low wages and being redeployed in other industries. There is a lack of younger people entering into the community service industry due to poor remuneration and a lack of an appropriate career path. As the population ages there, it follows that there will be fewer volunteers available, and this will directly impact on organizations' ability to deliver services, especially Meals on Wheels and community transport, whose volunteer force are aging. If this reducing number of volunteers is not addressed, services will close, and ADHC will have to become the major service provider in the state, as not-for-profit will become unsustainable without workers and volunteers. 28.11.37. Similarly, NDS noted that greater consideration is needed to be given to workforce planning, retention, training and mobility. NDS contends that the sector "s" ability to attract and retain a skilled workforce is also dependent on an extension of training, a focus on staff retention and development, the existence of multiple career pathways, ongoing strategic workforce planning and competitive remuneration. The sector's ability to secure an appropriately skilled workforce also depends on the capacity of employers to make their recruitment more efficient, compelling and competitive in relation to the open market. NDS promotes the continued investment in talent attraction and recruitment via Carer Careers, but also recommends greater consideration be given to workforce planning, retention, training and mobility. 29.11.38. The Association for Children with a Disability reported that the high turnover of care workers is detrimental to the health of children with disability. The association noted that with a high carer turnover, families face a revolving door of different paid carers. Not only is this detrimental to the child, it does not allow for the paid carers to ever build a rapport with the child or a sense that the paid carer is contributing to the child's development in the long term. 30.11.39. This revolving door of carers can also be stressful for the families involved. Submission 13 shared their frustration of having a continual turnover of case managers. As my son nears the end of school years, I have been reintroduced to the saga of the ADHC caseworker. Since the beginning of this year, I have attended 3 meetings with ADHC representatives, and I am yet to see the same person twice. On separate occasions, I have spoken to 3 different people who have introduced themselves as my son's new caseworker. I have spent 2 hours with one of these caseworkers providing a profile of my son's needs post-school. I have never spoken to the same person twice. ADHC seems to play a continual game of musical chairs, and it is near impossible to have more than 2 conversations with one person before they have moved on and a new person has taken over their position. 31.11.40. The Benevolent Society explained to the committee that it had managed to reduce its staff turnover from 25% to around 14% over a 2-year period. In terms of turnover, we are looking mostly at coordination level and case management level staff. Our most recent staff survey told us that we have reduced our turnover from around 25% to about 14% over a 2-year period, which we are quite pleased with. We have volunteers in our direct service delivery, and again we support them quite closely. We have a couple of positions within our head office, so to speak, that support volunteer recruitment, and at the local level we work closely not only with the volunteers themselves, but also with the home and community care volunteer programs in our region. 32. Committee comment 11.41. The committee is concerned about the high turnover of staff, and acknowledges the distress that this can cause for clients. The committee recommends that ADHC convene a cross-sector working party to develop a workforce retention strategy. Recommendation 2. That ADHC convene a cross-sector working party to develop a workforce retention strategy. This strategy should include, but not be limited to, issues of career pathways, professional development, working conditions, appropriate remuneration levels. That the strategy, including recommendations and actions, is published on ADHC's website. Differing pay rates between government and non-government providers. 11.42. ADHC provides funding for non-government organizations to deliver care services, and also as a direct service provider itself. The committee received evidence that carers employed by ADHC receive a higher rate of pay compared to staff doing the same work, but employed by a non-government provider. Mr. Moore suggested that non-government employees get paid a salary some 20 to 25% less than their government carer counterparts. 33. 11.43. Non-government service provider Northcott Disability Services explained to the committee this pay equity difference has created a barrier to employing staff and the disability system. ADHC is both a funding body and a provider of some direct services, for example, center-based respite, case management, therapy. However, non-government organizations, NGOs, are often funded at a lower rate than ADHC services for providing the same service. As a result of this, staff working in NGOs receive lower rates of pay than those working in ADHC services. This can serve as a barrier to attracting skilled staff to the NGO sector. As such, Northcott supports consistency in levels of funding for government and NGO-provided services. Alternatively, ADHC could cease to provide those services which are able to be provided more efficiently and effectively by the NGO sector, and use the savings realized to increase services. 34. 11.44. Mr. Mather told the committee that the wage disparity between the two sectors has meant that wages are simply too low to attract people to the industry. The obvious difference is that the wages that are paid to people working in ADHC-operated services are significantly higher than those for people who are working in ADHC-funded services. But in our sector, the average wages, I understand, about 60% of the national average wage for people working as carers in the disability sector in New South Wales. That is just too low, and we do struggle to attract people to the sector. 35. 11.45. Mr. LeBreton, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Enterprises LIRA, told the committee that his staff are paid less than ADHC staff, and that they deserve pay equity. I believe our staff deserve more. I am not saying that the ADHC staff deserve less. This is an issue nationally about the disparity between the current award that is being paid to people within the SACS award. Generally speaking, across this whole industry the pay is very, very meager. 36. 11.46. The committee heard that there is currently a pay equity case about these different levels of pay before Fair Work Australia. Mr. Moore explained to the committee, in the non-government sector there is a pay equity case that is now in front of the Fair Pay Commission, now called Fair Work Australia. That pay equity case is, on the way it has been put, likely to see a very substantial increase in wages. As part of the preparation for that, there is a collaborative effort among the sector players, their employers, the unions and the funders like the government to try to understand the exact nature of the totality of the workforce, so that we can then begin to understand what the financial and other consequences of that workforce would be, and what the pay equity case would be. Also, we can begin to think about how we can respond to that, rather than simply as an issue of an increase in wages. 37. 11.47. Mr. Mather explained that National Disability Services is fully supporting the pay equity case. However, he noted that it will have to be funded. We generally work under the Social and Community Services Award, which is one of the awards that will be covered by this pay equity case that is being taken before Fair Work Australia. We are fully supporting that. We are united I have to say everyone is united in that on the basis that when it comes in it is going to have to be funded. 38.11.48. In regard to salary levels, Mr. Moore summarized for the committee the findings of the Productivity Commission 2009 inquiry into the not-for-profit sector. In essence, wages in the not-for-profit sector, which employs a significant number of aging and disability carers, will have to increase. But the thing that I always thought was the most informative piece of advice in terms of judgments around this is that the Productivity Commission has only once in its lifespan, so I'm advised, said that there should be an increase in workers' wages, and that was in the not-for-profit report that it brought down last year. It had a really simple argument, a pure economics argument. It is what leads you to say there is something substantial in this, that the not-for-profit sector is the second largest contributor to the Australian economy. It must grow. Its wages will not allow it to grow. Therefore its wages have to go up. 39. Committee comment. 11.49. The committee supports the principle of equal pay for delivering the same service, no matter whether a carer is an employee of ADHC or a non-government provider. The committee understands that the successful outcome of the pay equity case before Fair Work Australia will have funding implications, which will need to be addressed by the New South Wales government. Professional development of staff. 11.50. The importance of properly trained carer staff was a theme included in many submissions to the committee. However, the committee received limited submissions on this issue from professional carers, so it has been difficult to determine the perspective of employees in regard to the amount and suitability of training provided to them. 11.51. Carers are entitled to professional development and training opportunities to expand and develop their skills. Mr. French, of the New South Wales Disability Discrimination Legal Centre Incorporated, explained to the committee that under the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, UNCRPD, there is a general obligation to promote the training of staff working with persons with a disability. Mr. French noted that the capacity of ADHC in the professional development area needs to be strengthened. Under Article 4(l)(i) of the UNCRPD, parties have a general obligation to promote the training of professionals and staff working with persons with disability. It is obvious from the issues we highlight above that ADHC currently lacks capacity to effectively implement a human rights-based approach to policy development and service delivery for persons with disability. Consequently, we believe the next phase of Stronger Together ought to incorporate a suite of measures that will build the capacity of ADHC and its staff to recognize and effectively implement a human rights-based approach to policy, program, and service development. This would include comprehensive professional development for all staff and UNCRPD rights and related issues that is calibrated with work roles, as well as the development of specific policy tools that will assist staff to ensure that practice is consistent with UNCRPD rights. 40. 11.52. Ms. Llewellyn explained that the Benevolent Society had a strong commitment to the professional development of its staff. She also discussed that some of the smaller carer organizations find the ADHC-funded training programs very positive. I think our organization is in quite a privileged position because we do have resources that would call on in terms of research internally, and we also have a very strong commitment towards learning and development for our staff, whether that is paid or unpaid. We really are quite clear that everyone in our organization has access to training, and that we have qualification levels that we expect to see, and if we do not have those qualification levels, we support people to obtain those. So for an organization of our size with that culture and commitment around that work, it works well for us. Where we have smaller organizations locally who need that extra support, ADHC does fund through the HACC program some very positive training programs for volunteers and for paid staff. Those are offered at no cost actually for HACC funded services. They are extremely effective because they are able to bring in experts around particular training areas that people identify within the region. 41. 11.53. The level training of home care workers was questioned by certain inquiry stakeholders. The committee heard of clients being injured because of poorly trained staff. The author of submission 69, a C5-6 complete quadriplegic, said he had experienced untrained carers which had resulted in unfortunate consequences. I have had untrained carers being rostered into my high needs care, not very often, but it should not happen at all. In some cases I have had carers changing routines because of their own inability or nursing an injury to try to retain the position which personally suited them. One such instance led to me developing a pressure area due to the inability of the carer using a hoist sling properly. I might add this was the first pressure area I had ever had in over 46 years. 42.11.54. Ms. Jackie Dufty, carer to her husband, stated that home care workers often said that they felt uncomfortable with the level of on-the-job training. 43. Furthermore, Ms. Dufty told the committee that an untrained care worker tore Ms. Dufty's husband's bowel wall while performing a bowel procedure. 44. 11.55. A long-time client of home care observed that on-the-job training requirements appear to have diminished in recent times. Mr. Adam Johnston, a home care service user, said he assisted in training his new care workers. It is also to my advantage that I am verbal and can give any new staff on-the-job training as required. Previously, this training was done by a second staff member who had experience with the client. However, in the last year or so, my personal observation is that this practice has not always been followed. Again, while the lack of an experienced staff member to train a recruit is not a major problem in my case, it could be confronting and problematic for a new carer and client alike, particularly if the latter has difficulty articulating their needs. 45.11.56. The author of submission 106, a former home care worker, noted that care workers need increased training and monitoring to ensure the best outcomes for clients. 46.11.57. Whilst Ms. Smith of the Disability Advocacy Information Center noted that ADHC are providing opportunities for staff to be trained to deliver better quality services, the committee heard from ADHC itself that more could be done. 47. Mr. Moore observed, "The Home Care Service of New South Wales has some ability to train staff and better within its funding. I think that across the board within the HACC system and the specialist disability system, and beyond, but across those two, the need to invest more in staff skills is very evident." 48.11.58. Mr. Moore also explained that some of the ADHC-operated services, such as the home care service, are likely to do more staff training than the smaller non-government providers. He told the committee that an important way forward is to share skill development with the non-government sector, because the home care service is big, because of the natural way in which big organizations operate compared with a lot of smaller ones, we would probably do a bit more staff training than the non-government sector. We certainly know in the disability side of our business that the conversation with the NGO representatives is how we will be able to better share resources on skill development, so that we can pull ourselves all up together, so to speak. 49.11.59. The committee heard that the non-government sector agrees with this shared skill development approach. For instance, NDS submitted that it would like to see a shared training regime between the whole of ADHC and the non-government sector. Consistency in access to shared training and resources between ADHC-operated and funded organizations would be beneficial. NDS would like to see a general principle put in place that allows for shared training and resources where relevant across the whole of ADHC and the NGO sector. This would be best administered by each region, but should be strongly communicated and transparently monitored by central office on the basis of partnership moving forward. 50. Committee comment 11.60. There are many facets to employee job satisfaction. Obviously, pay and remuneration is important, but a career path supported by training and professional development opportunities is also important. It is evident to the committee that a renewed commitment on the training and development of staff would be welcomed in both the government and non-government provider sector. In particular, the committee supports joint and regional professional development involving both the government and non-government providers. 11.61. The committee is concerned about the level of training for home care workers. Stories of clients being injured by poorly trained, ill-equipped staff are unacceptable. The committee recommends that the Home Care Service of New South Wales undertake an evaluation of training levels for all care workers. Recommendation 3. That the Home Care Service of New South Wales undertake an evaluation of training levels of all care workers, which identifies training gaps and how these will be addressed. Recommendation 4. That ADHC coordinate and share training programs and opportunities with both their own staff and that of non-government service providers in each of the 6 ADHC regions. Rude and abusive staff. 11.62. Earlier in this chapter, the importance of good carer staff was highlighted. The opposite of this is, of course, that bad staff can have a devastating effect on clients and their families. The committee heard evidence that carers can be rude, offensive and belittle their clients. 11.63. The relationship between poor quality staff and compliance with the New South Wales Disability Services Standards is examined in Chapter 9. 11.64. The committee held a public forum for people to share firsthand some of the problems they face when confronted with staff who are not caring. For example, Ms. Mason told the committee about her personal experience with ADHD staff. My personal experience in dealing with ADHD staff allows me to formally state I found them to be totally unprofessional in their contact and dealings with me. They were totally biased against me and my family, colluded and conspired together with staff of the service provider, and also, in my opinion, had a close and too familiar relationship with our advocate from one of this country's leading advocacy groups for people with disabilities, who are supposed to act independently. 51. 11.65. Ms. Sarkis shared with the committee her concerns about ADHD, referring to some departmental staff as cold-hearted souls. I know I might be sounding ungrateful or even disrespectful of the Department of Aging, Disability and Home Care, but maybe they should be respecting us first. Personally, I have come across many cold-hearted souls from ADHD, and I'm very sorry, but I am actually being very nice when I mention what I am saying. Most of the individuals working there should honestly look around them and remember what their department actually stands for. It really does not feel like they have any connection to humanity. There is no compassion. Maybe there are a few, but maybe they have their own barriers too, and it feels as though you cannot really get any truth out of anybody that I have ever had to deal with. I just need to be very honest about some of the things that have been said to me personally, whether they be face to face, over the phone, or just in passing. Many times I have been left shaken and sobbing after telephone conversations and or meetings. One sentence that was said to me by my supposedly understanding and compassionate case manager, who was also a mother herself, were the cold words, and honestly to this day it still sends a cold shiver down my spine. It must be so hard, so difficult for you being her mum, sitting there watching and waiting for Cheryl Eyes to die. Honestly, they are the exact words I will never forget. I was so shocked and so angry at the same time that I could not muster up any reply. 52. 11.66. The inappropriate use of words by an ADHD staff member was identified at the public forum by Mr. Joseph Harrison. He stated, I know of one ADHD staff in a senior position who still refers to people with intellectual disability as morons, arguing this is an acceptable medical diagnosis. That person was originally from a rural agency, but was working in head office in a senior role when we met in 2000. Doing within ADHD thought to address the matters as she is entitled to her private beliefs is the argument that I often heard. However, as a representative of ADHD addressing people with disability and their families and carers, and the non-government sector, her attitude has caused some disquiet and concern. 53. 11.67. Mr. Moore indicated to the committee that he understood the angst and distress that poor staff can cause. He noted the importance of various value statements and codes of conduct that ADHD staff must adhere to. However, Mr. Moore also explained to the committee that, whilst it is never acceptable for a staff member to behave badly towards their clients, sometimes there are very trying circumstances that need to be worked through, and this can sometimes explain, but not excuse, aberrant behavior. You cannot be in everybody's house alongside every staff member. As I said, there are 4,500 staff members, but we have various value statements, codes of conduct, and branch management supervision arrangements, where we would be dealing with appropriate ways of dealing with clients. Again, I am not saying that about the specific examples there, and I am not trying to in any way denigrate the person who is making the comments there. It is never acceptable for a staff member to behave like that. At the same time, it is a matter of one human being dealing with another human being, and situations can get difficult from both sides at times, and there are very trying circumstances that our staffs have to work through. While I am not trying to excuse behavior like that, I can explain it sometimes. 54. Committee comment. 11.68. The committee acknowledges the outstanding work of the majority of ADHD care workers. The work of these individuals allows people with disability to participate more fully in community life and offers respite for carers. The difficulties in supervising some 4,500 staff, caring for persons in their clients' homes under minimal supervision, unnoted. The committee believes that this is why attracting and retaining the right people to the profession in the first place is so important. 11.69. However, the committee acknowledges that it received evidence of some care staff who are rude, abusive and neglect their clients. This is clearly unacceptable. The committee strongly believes that both ADHC and the non-government service provider sector need to strengthen their reporting and accountability mechanisms so that clients can report inappropriate staff behavior and have confidence that their concerns will be dealt with promptly and appropriately. Recommendations to improve accountability mechanisms are contained in Chapter 9. The Special Problems in Regional and Remote Areas. 11.70. This chapter has canvassed many staffing issues in relation to aging and disability care. It became apparent to the committee that many of these issues are compounded in regional and remote areas. For example, Mrs. Vicky Happ, a mother of a child with Down syndrome, lives in far western New South Wales, with a two-hour drive to the largest regional centre of Dubbo. She explained to the committee the effect of this relative isolation. ADHC caseworkers/managers have large areas to cover, often with little or no experience in dealing with the diversity and complexity of families and the problems they face. Therefore, there is a significant staff turnover. Our family has had 5 caseworkers in my son's first 7 years of life. Some of that time the position was vacant, and some of the workers only lasted months. There has been reoccurring problems with ADHC availability of therapists. I have found ADHC services overall to be inconsistent, with some inexperienced therapists who leave to get married. Our last occupational therapist, we have not seen a nod from ADHC since, have babies. Our previous speech therapist, who twice went out on maternity leave, both times the position was not filled in her absence, or just leave because of the enormous workload and large area they service. 55.11.71. Similarly, Mrs. Norell, who's a mother of an adult disabled daughter, told the committee that having lived in both coastal and rural New South Wales, services in regional areas are not as good. Having lived in both coastal and rural New South Wales as well as Sydney, my experience has been that services are lacking in all areas. Many of the service providers funded by ADHC have a commitment to their clients, but are so overstretched due to lack of funding that they are unable to individualize programs. The situation in regional areas is even worse, with the lack of allied health professionals and case managers employed directly by ADHC. 56.11.72. Ms. Margaret Bowen, the Chief Executive Officer of Service Provider Disability Trust, recounted to the committee some of the difficulties in finding staff to work in remote and regional areas. It is a quality and skill issue, and it is a cost issue. We work with some people who live in very small towns. Finding and training staff in those environments is very difficult. If we cannot find staff that are available in a town of 300 or 400 people, or we have utilized, exhausted that community, we have really got to pay travel for people to come an hour down the road or half an hour down the road, because people just will not drive for an hour to work and drive home for an hour. There is no way of doing that other than to provide an incentive, and that is not something that funding covers traditionally. 57.11.73. ADHC is administratively divided into 6 regions. These are Metropolitan South, Metropolitan North, Hunter, Northern, Southern and Western. National Disability Services explained to the committee that the equitable delivery of services across these 6 regions is a continual issue. Equity, consistency, transparency, and portability across ADHC/S6 regional areas continues to be an issue reported to NDS frequently by non-government disability service providers. Frequent turnover of ADHC regional staff makes continuity and relationship building difficult for non-government organizations. Regional interpretations of central policies and procedures often vary greatly, and it is often only through sector feedback to NDS that these issues are identified. Streamlined, systemic approaches must be put in place to ensure greater consistency and equity across all regions in terms of procurement of services, engagement with NGOs, regional planning, communications and consultations, contract management, information provision and client referral processes. 58.11.74. The Physical Disability Council and Council on the Aging together submitted that, Whilst obtaining and retaining skilled workers and volunteers is difficult, it is even more problematic in rural and remote areas. 59.11.75 Northcott Disability Services explained to the committee that there are additional costs in providing services in rural and regional areas, and that this should be recognized when funding is allocated. Northcott outlined some of the problems of service delivery in regional and rural areas. There are additional costs associated with providing services in regional and rural areas, including large areas for service coverage resulting in increased travel, accommodation, and infrastructure costs for service delivery. This also impacts upon ability to meet service outputs as more time is spent on travel, indirect time, in order to deliver the same number of hours of service outputs. Difficulty in recruitment of qualified staff due to smaller pool of suitable workers and competition with other services. This can often mean employing less qualified staff who have additional training needs to meet the requirements of a role. As a statewide provider of disability services, Northcott sees the need for a review of the funding distributed for services covering regional and rural areas. Northcott also supports that additional funding, in the form of higher unit costs, should be built into funding models for service delivery in regional and rural areas, to allow for the additional cost to provide service. 60. Recommendation 5. Regional and rural services receive levels of funding based on higher unit costs. Committee comment 11.76. The committee recognizes the extra difficult circumstances that both aging and disability service providers and the service users face in rural and remote communities. Problems of distance, recruitment of suitable people and provision of training are all issues compounded by living away from major cities. 11.77. The committee received evidence that the provision of services is more expensive in rural and remote areas, and that higher per unit funding should be allocated to service providers in these areas. The committee considers that ADHC should investigate these concerns with a view to increasing the funding for services in rural and regional areas, if appropriate. Recommendation 5. That the Minister for Disability Services investigate the cost of providing aging and disability services in metropolitan and rural areas of New South Wales, with a view to increasing the funding allocation to ensure equity of service provision in rural areas, if required. 1. Submission 31. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, P6. 2. Mr. Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P5. 3. Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer, The Disability Trust, Evidence, 3 September 2010, P55. 4. Submission 23. Ms. Belinda Epstein Frisch, Systemic Advocacy, Family Advocacy, P2. 5. Submission 15. Ms. Estelle Shields, P5. 6. Mr. Anthony Verrill, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, P5. 7. Submission 40. Name suppressed, P1. 8. Ms. Bernadette Maloney, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, P18. 9. Submission 13A. Ms. Bernadette Maloney, P1. 10. Submission 43. Name suppressed, P2. 11. Mr. Greg Killeen, Senior Policy Officer, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, Evidence, 26 August 2010, P34. 12. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 27 September 2010, P4. 13. ADHC Media Release, Awards for Outstanding Local Carers, 20 October 2010, Access, 21 October 2010, www.dadg.newsouthwales.gov.au/dadg/media+reles/20101020+locals/ores.htm. 14. Submission 108, Ms. Louise Bannerman, Disability Development Officer, Warringah Council, P4. 15. Ms. Hewitt, Chairperson, Futures Alliance, and Director, Uniting Care Disability, Evidence, 3 September 2010, P49. 16. Submission 66, Mr. Peter Kell, Anglica, Diocese of Sydney, P19. 17. Submission 32, Ms. Emily Kasker, National Disability Services, New South Wales, P38. 18. Mr. Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P4. 19. Dr. Kate Moore, Manager, Workforce Initiative, National Disability Services, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 39. 20. Submission 106, Name Suppressed, p. 121. Submission 66, Mr. Peter Kell, Chief Executive Officer, Anglica, Diocese of Sydney, p. 19. 22. Submission 66, p. 19. 23. Submission 31, p. 96. 24. Dr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 39. 25. Submission 32, Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, New South Wales, p. 38. 26. National Disability Services, News, A Call to Recruit Younger Skilled Workers, Project ABLE launches, 23 March 2010, access 15 October 2010, www.nds.org.au/news/article/627/27, Submission 31, p. 96, 28, Submission 51, Ms. Ruth Robinson, Executive Officer, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales, and Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging New South Wales, p. 10, 29, Submission 32, p. 38, 30, Submission 96, Ms. Katrina Clark, Executive Member, Association for Children with a Disability New South Wales, p. 22, 31, Submission 13, Ms. Bernadette Maloney, p. 132, Ms. Sharon Llewellyn, Regional Programs Manager, The Benevolent Society, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 30, 33, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 8, 34, Submission 70, Ms. Liz Forsyth, Manager, Service Development and Government Relations, Northcote Disability Services, p. 5, 35, Mr. Patrick Mather, Chief Operating Officer and State Manager, National Disability Services, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 39, 36, Mr. John Le Breton, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Enterprises, Evidence, 30 September 2010, p. 10, 37, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 8, 38, Mr. Mather, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 39, 39, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 8, 40, Submission Number 20, Mr. Philip French, Director, New South Wales Disability Discrimination Legal Centre Incorporated, p. 12, 41, Ms. Llewellyn, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 28, 42, Submission 69, Name Suppressed, p. 143, Ms. Jackie Dufty, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, p. 13, 44, Ms. Dufty, Public Forum, 27 September 2010, p. 13, 45, Submission 104, Mr. Adam Johnston, p. 2, 46, Submission 106, Name Suppressed, p. 1, 47, Submission 57, Ms. Susan Smith, Coordinator, Disability Information Advocacy Service, p. 4, 48, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 5, 49, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 5, 50, Submission 32, p. 11, 51, Ms. Carolyn Mason, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, p. 17, 52, Ms. Said Sarkis, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, p. 21, 53, Mr. Joseph Harrison, Public Forum, 30 September 2010, p. 19, 54, Mr. Moore, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 5, 55, Submission 1, Mrs. Vicky Happ, p. 1, 56, Submission 26, Mrs. Narelle Hughes, p. 1, 57, Ms. Bowen, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 59, 58, Submission 32, p. 14, 59, Submission 51, p. 10, 60, Submission 70, p. 5,